Anthony Reich, well, that was a very strange intro, but nevertheless, a very good morning.
Bokertov, good morning. How are you doing today, Howard?
Yeah, so between South Africa last night, Cyril Ramaphosa announcing his the choice of cabinet here in South Africa, and Israel waiting until the last moment to see if it was being forced back to the polls. It was a very, very long and short night both.
Interesting night, but the result is that one country has a government and the other one doesn't.
And in fact, one of our listeners earlier asking the question, who is the, is there, in fact, I want to go to the question. It was an important one. Just give me one. Here we go. What is Netanyahu's official position now? He was not the prime minister, but someone who had been asked to form a government, which he was unable to. He only becomes prime minister when he wins a vote of confidence from the Knesset, surely. So what is he? And who is the prime minister?
So the answer is that the previous prime minister remains on, and the previous government remains on until the new government is sworn in. So even though he was only the person who was asked to form the government, he coincidentally happened to also be the previous prime minister. So he remains still the prime minister by virtue of that fact until such time as a new government is sworn in. So that's really the situation. So, for example, let's take somebody like Naftali Bennett or Ayelet Shaked, who were not winners of seats in the last round of elections. They still remain ministers in the government to this moment, and they will continue to remain ministers in the government probably now until almost the end of the year, because the previous government remains in office, albeit, you know, what they would call in America kind of in a lame duck sort of situation, because they know that they're only just treading water, they're only just filling the seat until the new government is appointed, is sworn in. And so the truth of the matter is that you wouldn't expect any major policy decisions or major developments to come out of any government offices until such time as a new government is appointed. So we're effectively in a state of limbo, even though the old government remains in office, but really is just filling spaces in a state of limbo. So nothing significant will be undertaken by them.
Would it be accurate to say that should, for example, God forbid, a war break out, they would be able to deal with anything that comes Israel's way, but they would not, it would be unlikely that they'd be able to further policy or make progress in any way?
That, I think that's a fair way of putting it, you know, that they are reactionary at the moment. They are in office, they legally have those positions, but they're very much reacting rather than proactive. And so, yeah, I mean, if God forbid a war was to break out, then the cabinet certainly would be in place, as well as the security cabinet, and all of the old faces would be there, because obviously a new government has yet to be formed.
Yeah. It's what's the reaction in Israel? Are people, I mean, I'm not Israeli, and all I do is comment on this, but and I'm exhausted by it, and I'm thinking I actually can't believe we've got to go through this all again. What's the reaction of people in Israel?
Well, I think people are just kind of almost despairing at the fact that this is the situation. But you know, I think there seem to be two schools of thought. School of thought number one is more of the same nonsense. So we're going to go through an election which is now only going to be in like 4 months' time or something like that, which is really an extended period to have to wait. It's going to cost the country, by the time we finish preparing the next round of election, by the time people have been given the day off, it's going to cost the economy in the order of a billion shekels this next round of elections. So people are just going, waste of money, waste of time. We're going to be back in October and November with exactly the same situation, because, you know, why would people suddenly change their minds and vote something different? It seems unlikely that people are going to suddenly come from nowhere and change things around. So we're probably going to be back fighting the same battle again just 4 or 5 months later, whatever is going to be. So that's one school of thought. School of thought number two is that we've actually hit a very significant moment in Israel's democratic development. And the significant moment is that the secular element of the Knesset are standing up to the ultra-Orthodox and saying no under any circumstances. And this is giving the Israeli public a little bit of food for thought about, you know, where we stand as a country and what the demographical issues are that we're having to face. And it's ironic that the government could not be formed due to issues which are really battles between ourselves rather than things that you would normally expect. You would normally expect that the government disagrees or potential coalition members disagree on issues of security or on issues of economy or of issues of significant policy significance. You know, that you would think would be kind of the issues of the day, and those are the issues upon which people disagree. And yet we are disagreeing over the relationship between secular and religious. We're disagreeing over whether Knesset members should have indemnification from prosecution or not. We're disagreeing over whether the High Court of Justice should have the right to overrule Knesset promulgation of laws or not. These are the things that we're disagreeing over. They are kind of internal battles within Israeli society. And I think that says a great deal about where we're at right now, particularly given the major issues that we've got to deal with. We've got Gaza, we've got Lebanon, we've got Hezbollah, we've got Syria, we've got Iran. You know, we've got stuff to think about. And yet those things are not even on the table. Those things are not even being considered at this moment while the government's being formed. And so there is a view that says that this is a watershed moment in Israeli politics, that Avigdor Lieberman has held out and said he's not going to capitulate to the demands of the ultra-Orthodox. And there is a feeling that this may well be a very significant changing moment in Israel's political development and in Israel's democratic development.
Yeah, I tend to agree, and I think it might be important. You know, if we look at the debacles, for example, over what went on at the Kotel, at the Western Wall, when Netanyahu would come to an agreement with everybody, and then, for example, the Haredi parties would come in, would say, no, you know, sorry, that's not going to happen, and everything sort of backpedals. It did cause a tremendous amount of chaos. Maybe now everybody has learned that the things that are important need to be put on the table, but maybe something that is less so and that people could compromise about shouldn't be forced, because otherwise it'll be a step too far and it's simply not going to work. Maybe it is a good thing at the end of the day.
Well, the battles on the whole religious front really extend a lot further than just simply the recruitment to the IDF, and in fact,
well, that's why I raised another type of, I raised the issue of the cartel, because it impacts on every aspect of potentially every aspect of Israeli life
and Jewish life,
let's not stop at Israeli life,
because this issue of the cartel is affecting Israel's relationship, for example, with American Jewry, absolutely, because American Jews, in the large part, feel that there should be some sort of way of people going to the Kotel where men and women have a mixed area. And, of course, right now the ultra-Orthodox are opposing that. And, you know, so this is a major issue not only for Israeli society, but indeed for the Jewish world in general. And that even extends further, for example, to the issue that has been raised by Avigdor Lieberman of civil marriage. There is no concept of civil marriage in Israel at all. So, for example, if people wish to get married without the Rabbanut's involvement, that is not an option that is available to couples in Israel. Mm. And, of course, as a result of that, people who are not of the same religion cannot be married in Israel at all. And, of course, all this whole thing about same-sex marriages and things like that, of course, is completely out of the question, simply because marriage is something which is ruled by the Rabbanut. And if you don't fall squarely within halachic principles in terms of getting married, then you are disqualified from getting married. And, of course, it extends to the whole issue of people who have not been given gets, and it extends to the whole issue of a Kohen marrying a divorcee, for example. You know, so I mean, these halachic principles really extend very far. And those people have no alternative in Israel. And so Avigdor Lieberman, who up until now has really represented by and large the community of people who've made Aliyah from the former Soviet Union, a lot of them are not halachically Jewish for one reason or another. And they live in Israel and they live as Jews and they serve in the army and they do everything that other Israelis do, speak Hebrew and send their children to Israeli schools and celebrate Pesach and Yom HaTzmaut like everybody else does. But they are halachically either not Jewish at all or can't sufficiently prove that they are halachically Jewish. And therefore, as far as the Israeli Rabbanut is concerned, they are not Jewish and they are therefore not entitled to marry another Jew in this country. And of course, they are not entitled to be buried in a Jewish cemetery. And there are certain things that are beyond them because of this question about their halachic Jewishness. And especially in the issue of getting married, Lieberman has represented this community and said those people whose halachic links to Judaism are in question or maybe not in question, they're just not halachically Jewish, they should also be entitled to get married in the state of Israel.
100%.
And it seems to him and to that community and indeed to many others to be inconceivable that those people have to travel abroad. A lot of them go to Cyprus because it's nearby, travel abroad, get married there in a civil ceremony, then come back to Israel, and then be entitled to register that marriage with the Israeli Ministry of the Interior, because that you can do. A civil marriage from abroad, when you bring it to Israel, is recognized. You just can't do it in Israel. And so Lieberman, I think, is now getting a lot of support from the secular community, from the non-Orthodox community, beyond the people who've made Aliyah from the former Soviet Union. I think he's now becoming something of an icon, something of a representative of, in general, the community of people who are saying that the control that the Rabbanut has over certain elements of Israeli life is not okay.
Absolutely. Look, I have to say that and many of our listeners will not agree with me, and they'll vehemently disagree that as an observant Jew, I think that this has been the Rabbanut in Israel and the Haredi parties have brought this on. I think that the Rabbanut has had plenty of time to reform. And they have been completely, completely tone deaf to the needs of Israeli society. By doing so, I think they have done tremendous damage to the religious community as well, not only to the non-religious community, because they have alienated people. And you know, when I spend a moment thinking about this, I happen to think that this is a watershed moment. I agree with what you're saying, and that I think it's very important. There is one question though. Gimple the Fool sent it a little bit earlier, and I've been you know, waiting for the opportunity to get to it, and it does bother me as well. He wants to know what happens if Israel can't form a coalition again at the next election. I mean, could this go on in perpetuity, in theory?
In theory, I guess it could go on in perpetuity, but in all honesty, I don't concur with the view that we're just going through another round of what we've already been through. I think there are things that are going to be different this time. I think there are some changes that we're going to see. And I don't think that they're only going to come from people who potentially are going to support Lieberman more than they did before, because I think he has been the one person, in spite of the fact that he is the person who's being held up as having responsibility for the fact that this government could not be formed. I think he's coming out of it with the greatest credibility out of everybody in the eyes of the general public, because he's the guy who really has stuck to his guns, a politician who actually sticks to what he believes in and who's honest and who will not be bent. Seems to be an unusual thing in Israeli politics in general. And I think that Lieberman is coming out with a lot of credibility, and I suspect that he's going to get some additional support as a result of that in the next round. And we're also seeing other things happening. Moshe Kachalon's Kulanu party is being folded into the Likud. He had 10 seats. The Likud had 30-odd seats. And so they are being folded in now, as well as Ayelet Shaked. There's talk of her actually officially joining the Likud. And so she may well come in to, you know, to be part of the Likud and change things around a little bit. And as a result of that, I think that we are not going to see what we saw in the previous round. I think things are going to be different. And it's going to be interesting to see how the Israeli electorate deals with that and how they respond to it. Benny Gantz has been particularly quiet during this whole period of putting a government together. We do understand from, I understand from what I've read that Gantz was actually approached by Netanyahu amongst everybody else, to come into a coalition, and he refused to do so, which is also an interesting point. But be that as it may, I think that we are going to see an entirely different type of election going forward as a result of what we've just seen over the past few weeks.
Absolutely right, Anthony Reich. That's where we leave it. Fascinating, fascinating turn of events. It's just gone 8 o'clock. It is Thursday, which means we get to speak to you on Monday morning once again. And I've no doubt that lots will have happened by then. We didn't speak about the Hezbollah tunnel. Zanati is talking about it in the news, but nevertheless, you have a fantastic weekend, a Shabbat Shalom, and we will catch you on the other side.